QST, QST, QST. This is Bruce, KK5DO. And it is once again time for another edition of the Houston AmSatNet. This net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1664, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, May 19th, 2026, which in UTC time is Wednesday, May 20th, 2026 at 0100. Sorry, this net is only being heard on Echolink and our normal streaming service, Duck Streaming, and I can't reach the repeater from my house. So URLs for this evening's net are located at amsatnet.com. And I've got a whole bunch of neat stuff that I've found. And we're going to start off with a late AmSat News Service bulletin that just came out today. The AmSat News Service bulletins are free. You can sign up for them at amsatnet.com. OrigamiSat 2. The satellite was launched April 23rd. On an Electron launch vehicle from Rocket Lab Launch Complex 1 in New Zealand, developed by the Institute of Science, Tokyo, the satellite will demonstrate on-orbit high-gain antenna technology for small satellites and a 5.8 GHz downlink transmitter. At the request of the Institute of Science, Tokyo, AmSat hereby designates OrigamiSat 2 as Fuji Oscar 126. We congratulate the Institute of Science Tokyo, thank them for their contribution to the amateur satellite community, and wish them continued success on this and future projects. And that comes from Drew, KO4MA, who's the AmSat president. He's also the Oscar number administrator. 126 Oscar numbers have been given out, right? To today. So that's a whole lot of amateur satellites that have successfully launched and operated from space. So that's cool. Hopefully the mission will give us a lot to listen to on that 5.8 gigahertz so people can get used to it. And let me see, what else did I find? Radiant, Radio Amateur Delay Tolerant Interplanetary Networking Testbed, a collaborative project bringing delay-tolerant networking to amateur radio. Why this matters for amateur radio satellites. DTN is the working technology NASA uses for deep space communications. It's designed for exactly the conditions we deal with in amateur satellites, intermittent links, long delays, and disrupted paths. Radiant aims to give our community hands-on participation in this technology from terrestrial experiments all the way to cislunar space. The vision. We're building this in stages, each one offering opportunities for amateur participation. Terrestrial validation in progress. That's a two-node DTN over VHF stroke UHF. Then there's QO100 satellite demonstration. First amateur DTN over a real space link. Then LEO CubeSat payload, ground to space DTN store and forward. And then cislunar amateur participation in Earth-Moon networking, seeking ESA-RT's program support. And who's involved? Project is supported by AmSat UK, AmSat DL, and Goonhilly Earth Station. And how you can help. We're actively looking for collaborators, whether you're packet radio operator, microwave experimenter, an EME operator, a CubeSat builder, or just curious about space networking. Areas include ground station partnerships, hardware, software, RF testing, and flight opportunities. everything will be open source and documented. And you can register at radiant.amsat-uk.org. So that comes from Dave, G4DPZ. Rather interesting what the future may bring. So that's called Radiant. And now we've got some of the ANS bulletins from AMSAT News Service 137. And we'll start with AMSAT Radio Adventure at Hamvention. The theme of this year's Hamvention Radio Adventure, or Hamvention, is Radio Adventure. And AMSAT has been highlighting the adventure of satellite communication for visitors to its large exhibit area. Occupying its usual spot in the northwest corner of Building 1 at the Greene County Fairgrounds and Event Center in Xenia, Ohio, AMSAT Engineering, Educators, Youth Outreach, and User Services provided a rich collection of resources and information to visitors. Business was brisk at the Beginner's Corner, where new hams and hams new to satellites came to have questions answered and to purchase print copies of the book, Getting Started with Amateur Satellites. The AMSAT store was active, supplying shirts, caps, CubeSat sims, frequency charts, and aero antennas to satellite enthusiasts. Many AMSAT members also stopped by to renew their AMSAT memberships for another year, and a few made donations to join the AMSAT President's Club. AMSAT Engineering drew crowds to view the prototype of the Gulf T satellite, currently in development, as well as speak to engineering volunteers on hand about the Fox Plus project, and to see a prototype of the SDR Gen 2 transponder board. AMSAT Education drew considerable interest as live demonstrations of both the CubeSat Sim and CubeSat Sim Lite were underway. And youngsters were drawn to the BuzzSat exhibit, where they enjoyed coloring pages from the BuzzSat Satellites in Space coloring book and working through Satellites in Space Help Us Live a Better Life on Earth. Free online courses on laptop computers available in the display. At the AMSAT Taper Banquet, Ray Roberge, WA1CYB, a member of AMSAT's engineering team, spoke about progress on AMSAT's SDR Gen 2 project, including what it does and where it can be used. So that's some interesting stuff. And we'll take a pause here to let the repeaters reset, KK5DO. Okay, we've got some check-ins here from K9OIM, that's Bob, WD0AKO, that's Dale, N6UTC, Endoff, KAYFC, Steve, AD0HJ, Mitch, and KC5LWY, Andrew. Thank you guys for joining us on EchoLink. And let's see what else we got over here. The VUCC satellite standings for May. Well, W5CBF just jumped up to 1,895 grid squares. I think I'm sitting somewhere around 800. I see EA2AA has 1,214. WC7V, 1,626. And let's see, I did. Here's the DXCC list. JE2VVN with 240 DXCC countries. This week, let's see, EA8JF is the first DXCC satellite holder from the Canary Islands, so congratulations to him. Let me see if it's got, where is it? EA8. I want to scroll up here and see how many he submitted for. Where is he? I don't see him down around the 100s. I guess I don't see him in that list at all, so that's okay. He must have earned it on the last list. So congratulations to all those that updated their DXCC. Now, AMSAT-DL to highlight QO100 at Friedrichshafen. So this is Ham Radio 2026 event in Germany, and it's going to be held in June. And they cordially invite all QO100 users and amateur radio satellite enthusiasts to an open community workshop, building on experiences with Gutter, Oscar 100, or QO100, and current activities in the future geosynchronous Earth orbit environment. The event invites amateurs to discuss together with the community what a future geostationary amateur radio payload could look like. The aim of the workshop is to gather ideas, requirements, and perspectives from the user community and place them in a common context. As a basis for discussion, AMSAT-DL will present 2 to 3 concrete mission and payload concepts that reflect different development directions and are deliberately put up for open discussion. Number one is Enhanced QO100 Plus, or BASIC, an evolutionary approach that builds on the success of QO100, classic bent-pipe, narrow-band, and wide-band transponders, an advanced beacon architecture, multi-band downlinks, and additional functions such as text and image transmission, for example, for emergency and disaster communications, Internet of Things, etc. Number two is digital innovation, which is extended, a more experimental-oriented concept with extensive digital signal processing on board. The focus is on flexible software-defined payload architectures, regenerative processing, and a digital playground for new modulation and access methods and user experiments, but with the risk of being very software-heavy. Then number three is High Frequency Pathfinder, which they're calling optional, an explorative approach with beacons and experiments in very high frequency ranges, in other words, millimeter wave, supplemented by new antenna concepts, propagation, and environmental measurements, as well as Earth and space imaging. So the open workshop is designed to be explicitly open. These concepts are not intended as ready-made solutions, but as a basis for discussion. The aim is to evaluate together with the participants which approaches are particularly interesting, sensible, and sustainable for the amateur radio satellite community, which aspects should be pursued further or in greater depth, but also the risks and dependencies should be addressed. Both experienced satellite radio operators and anyone interested in the future development of amateur radio satellites, new technical concepts, possible applications are invited to attend. Okay, thematic focus, experiences and lessons learned from the operation of QO100, user requirements and expectations for future GEO amateur radio payloads, discussion of the 2 to 3 future GEO concepts presented, possible technical development directions and areas for experimentation, role of the amateur radio community in future missions. The workshop thrives on participation, discussion of the exchange of ideas. It is not a frontal lecture, but an interactive format with an open end. Organizational data. Event, Future GEO Community Workshop. It'll be Saturday, June 27th. It starts at 1600 hours. The duration, it's open-ended. The venue is Ham Radio 2026, in Friedrichshafen. The room will be announced at the in the program. Registration is not necessary. Just come along and bring your ideas, questions, and experiences. So that comes from AMSAT DL and another geostationary somewhere in the world to cover another portion of it would be great. I think if we put two more geostationaries up, we'd cover the whole, just about the whole Earth. So that'll be kind of nice. Or at least we get the upper half, maybe a few more, and we get both upper and lower halves. So it's interesting. Here's something that's kind of cool. PaperSat, a satellite tracking app for the M5 Paper S3 device. Ever out in the field on a sunny day and struggle to view your satellite tracking application on your phone? Want a refrigerator magnet that tracks satellites? PaperSat is now available for the M5 Paper S3, a small ESP32-S3-based e-ink device with capacitive touch and built-in battery. PaperSat downloads and caches the complete AMSAT NASA Bear.txt TLE collection, parses it locally, and lets users select any satellite via a paginated touch menu, and there are 10 satellites per page. Now remember, last week we talked about the TLEs going away, and they're going to have to go to CSV or one of the other formats, so hopefully they'll be able to update that software as well. Okay, so features. Advanced Polar AZL Plot. Large high-contrast sky view with elevation rings, azimuth radials, north, south, east, west labeled. Live satellite position. A filled square when above the horizon. Direction of travel arrow. And smart pass trajectory. When the satellite is visible, it draws the current AOS to LOS path. When below the horizon, it automatically shows the next upcoming path. Okay, precise pass predictions. The main screen displays the next three passes. Oops, let me take a quick little break here. It comes up so fast. Okay, this is KK5DO continuing. And precise pass predictions. The main screen displays the next three passes with UTC, AOS to LOS times, including seconds, and peak elevation. Live tracking. Real-time azimuth and elevation readout. Adaptive screen refresh. 15 seconds when the satellite is visible, 60 seconds otherwise for power efficiency. All-day battery life. Has a UTC clock, battery percentage, and TLE refresh or freshness indicator. Then there's the full-on device configuration. Touch keyboard entry for a 4 or 6 character Maidenhead grid locators or manual lat long. Wi-Fi setup via built-in Wi-Fi manager, captive portal, and manual UTC time stroke date settings. Offline first design. The entire TLE database is stored in little FS flash memory. The device works 100% offline after the initial download and gracefully falls back to cached data. TLEs auto-refresh every 24 hours when Wi-Fi is available or can be forced manually with the Update TLEs button on the SelectSat screen. PaperSat was vibe-coded by Paul Stutzer, N8HM, utilizing Grok 4.3. The next enhancement coming soon will be to switch the source of orbital elements from the soon-to-be-deprecated TLE format to AMSAT's modern general perturbation. Ooh, that's a good one. perturbations data, likely via JSON. Feedback and suggestions are welcome. So that's kind of neat. Thanks to Paul Nadechem, who happens to be AMSAT's executive vice president. I might take a look at that. It sounds interesting. So, let's see. We've got Damien that joined us, AG9P. And here's something interesting. Okay, we've talked before over the past few years about having to bring your satellite back after the end of mission and ways to do that. And we're going to have to wait and see how some of the higher orbit ones will work their way back in or have a method to do that. So now let's look at zero emissions. Most rockets burn thousands of liters of fuel before they even clear the launch pad. Spin launch aims to skip that phase. Using a vacuum-sealed centrifuge at Spaceport America, the California-based company spins payloads to 8,000 kilometers per hour before releasing them skyward. A small rocket motor handles only the final orbital insertion, bypassing the most fuel-intensive part of the journey. By September 2022, Spin Launch completed 10 successful suborbital tests carrying hardware for NASA, Airbus, and Cornell University. While the flights themselves are less intense, the company's lab qualification in Long Beach proved that satellite components could survive 10,000 Gs of centrifugal force, the exact environment required for a kinetic launch. NASA's data confirmed the system is compatible with standard satellite hardware, clearing the first major hurdle for the technology. A conventional rocket's fuel requirement increases exponentially with its payload by providing 70% of the initial velocity on the ground. Spin Launch's kinetic approach drastically reduces propellant needs. This puts projected launch costs between $1,250 and $2,500 per kilogram, less than half the price point of a SpaceX 9 or SpaceX Falcon 9. Beyond cost, the system produces zero combustion emissions during the acceleration phase and minimizes orbital debris by eliminating expendable booster stages. The transition from suborbital prototypes to a full orbital accelerator remains the project's greatest challenge. At orbital speeds, atmospheric drag becomes a violent engineering obstacle. While suborbital tests validated the physics at a smaller scale, the orbital class centrifuge remains in an exploratory phase as of May 2026. The question isn't whether the centrifuge can spin. It's whether a vehicle can survive the transition from a vacuum chamber to the thicker atmosphere at hypersonic speeds. That is really cool. And this story came from Futura Sciences, futura-sciences.com. So we thank them for such an interesting story. Just think of launching a whole bunch of CubeSats. Boom, 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 boom. They don't weigh anywhere near a kilogram. So, you know, that would be within the cost that everyone can afford. So that's kind of nice. There have been no changes in the two-line elements for this week. Okay, receiving DATV from the ISS. So, are you looking for something new to do? How about receiving DATV from the ISS? Please note the ham TV system is back on board but awaiting reinstallation. Please monitor ERIS-EU or ERIS-ON for the very latest news on the troubleshooting efforts. So they should be bringing that back up start sending some TV. That would be really interesting. And before we go through all the Eris news, I think I'll go ahead and stop this for a second to let the repeaters reset. KK5DO. Okay, I see WD0AKO. Oh, I think he was here before. He just moved up in the list. Okay, recently completed contacts. Toby Junior High School in Toby, Japan. They had a contact back on May 12th. And upcoming, let's see. Well, the May 18th one is already gone. That one is with the Memorial Complex of Soviet Pilot Cosmonaut A.G. Nikolov. And, of course, that will be in Russia. And then there's one scheduled for May 20th, which is, let's see, that will be coming up in about 13 hours or so. And it's with N.I. Lovachevsky, Lycom, and school number 132 in Russia. And, gosh, I don't want to pronounce all these Russian names. There's another one coming up May 21st. And Collegio San Lucas in Buenos Aires. They're going to have a contact on May 21st. And then POIC at Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. They'll have a contact on May 22nd. And if you want to listen at that, it's going to be at 1546 UTC. And let's see, where they do it. That's going to be via a telebridge. So the ISS will be over Italy at the time. So it'll be with IK1 SLD. But you know, the kids still see it as a ham radio contact because they're doing their contact with a radio. Okay. And let me see. Where do you want to listen for that? 437.800, I guess, the downlink. And the crossband repeater continues to be active on 145.990. And if you'd like to listen in for that ham TV test signal, it's on 2.395 gigahertz. All the radios are turned off during any EVA docking or undocking for safety. And they are going to, well, let's see, they're going to power down May 13th, and everything will be powered down then, and it'll come back up on May 20th at 1455. I think that's just about the time they're going to be, an hour before they do that contact with that school. So, there's the ERIS schedule. Of course, Hamvention is all over, but you can look forward to the October 8th through 11th 44th AMSAT Space Symposium and Annual Membership Meeting. It will be at the Crown Plaza JAX Airport in Jacksonville, Florida. So I hope to see everybody there for that. And if you happen to be in the area and you'd like to get some DXCC, VUCC, Worked All States, QSL cards checked, guess who's going to be there and can do that? I will be there and I can check DXCC cards, VUCC cards, Worked All States. So come and visit, and I'll be happy to check those for you. Now, M Squared is not making LEO packs right now. They're not sure, or we are not sure, when they're going to start filling some of the orders that we have or that we can start selling again. So just watch the AMSAT store, and as soon as they give us word that they can start producing and shipping them, then we'll have them for offered for sale. NASA's Curiosity Mars rover got a rock stuck to the drill on the end of its robotic arm. After waving the arm and running the drill a few times, finally detached the rock. On April 25, 2026, Curiosity drilled a sample from a rock nicknamed Atacama, which is an estimated 1.5 feet in diameter, at its base 6 inches thick, and weighs roughly 28.6 pounds or 13 kilograms. When the rover retracted its arm, the entire rock lifted out of the ground. Suspended by the fixed sleeve that surrounds the rotating drill bit, drilling has fractured or separated the upper layers of the rocks in the past, but a rock has never remained attached to the drill sleeve. The team initially tried vibrating the drill to shake off the rock, but saw no change. Then on April 29th, they tried reorienting Curiosity's robotic arm and vibrating the drill again. Finally, on May 1st, Curiosity's team tried again, tilting the drill more, rotating and vibrating the drill, and spinning the drill a bit. The team planned to perform these actions multiple times, but the rock came off on the first round, fracturing as it hit the ground. Isn't that interesting? That comes from NASA. They could have sent out the Maytag repairman to fix that. Okay, NASA this week released thousands of pictures captured during last month's Artemis II mission around the moon. And you can find them, and I'm not going to read the long URL, but it is at amsatnet.com if you're so inclined to peruse those thousands of pictures. And here's another interesting one. Russian company Bureau 1440 has brought into low orbit the first 16 broadband internet satellites of the new RASVET constellation. Already dubbed by observers and local media, the Russian answer to SpaceX's Starlink. It's an ambitious global internet project that experts say could conceal much broader strategic goals, with functions including military and communications control. The launch took place on March 23rd at 1724 UTC from the military's Pelestsk Cosmodrome using the Soyuz 2.1B launcher and marked the first step in building an infrastructure that is expected to have at least 300 satellites by 2030. This story comes from Wired.com. So it's interesting how many companies and things are getting into internet. And I do have another story in a minute, so we'll get to that. And let me take a quick pause here to reset repeaters. KK5DO. All right, now, a mission to prevent a $500 million NASA Space Observatory from meeting a fiery demise just passed a notable pre-launch testing milestone. The Neil Gehrels Swift Observatory, a spacecraft launched in 2004, is at risk of falling back through the atmosphere and burning up without intervention. On May 8, NASA announced that the Lynx spacecraft manufactured by Catalyst Space Technologies to intervene before Swift's fate is sealed, completed its slate of environmental testing at the agency's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. Swift doesn't have its own onboard propulsion system and would naturally decay in orbit over time. However, increased solar activity in recent years accelerated the lowering timeline for the observatory, dropping it from about 600 kilometers to 400 kilometers, with anticipated reentry in late 2026 without intervention. That's why in September 2025, NASA awarded Catalyst a $30 million contract to develop a spacecraft capable of docking with Swift and boosting its orbit. And this story came from Space Flight Now, and we thank them for that interesting information. And SpaceX announced that it is planning a launch of the first Starship Version 3 vehicle as soon as May 19th from its Starbase facility in South Texas. Liftoff is planned for 2230 UTC. So if you happen to have been down that way, let's see, that's today. What, it may be 15 to 20 hours from now? That'll be interesting. And that does it for the AMSAT News Service Bulletin for this week. The editor was Mark Johns, K0JM. Okay, now let's go over here and let's take a quick look. Here's this story. I found this one and I went looking over on Space News. So, this story on Space News was written by Sandra Irwin. And it's dated May 19th, so it's a new story. And it's a startup challenging satellite industry's multi-orbit playbook. And I guess she's in Washington, or maybe that's where this company, Space News, is, one or the other. And it says, since SpaceX disrupted the satellite communications market with low-latency broadband from low-Earth orbit, traditional satellite operators have promoted multi-orbit architectures that combine low-Earth orbit, medium Earth orbit, and geostationary satellites into integrated communication systems designed to survive outages, attacks, and congestions. The Pentagon has largely embraced the concept as it looks for ways to reduce dependency on any single commercial provider. Okay, so there's this San Francisco startup, and they're arguing the industry may have overcomplicated the problem. The company is Contrivion, a telecommunications software company founded in 2023. It's arguing that stitching together satellites operating at vastly different altitudes introduces technical complications that degrade performance for modern internet applications. Instead, the company says future military communication networks should rely primarily on multiple LEO constellations operating together. So the company recently launched a platform called Contrivion Constellation that dynamically routes traffic among different LEO providers, including Starlink and Amazon, under a single managed service. The system is now being tested with U.S. Special Operations Forces, whose missions often depend on maintaining communications in contested environments. The debate gets at a larger question of whether resilience comes from layering together every available orbit, or from making proliferated LEO systems interchangeable enough that users no longer depend on any one provider. And I think something like that is going on with the mobile phones now, where they're talking about, like, T-Mobile has their satellites that they use, and I think Apple is using another set of LEOs, and they want to make it where no matter where you are, if you pick up a satellite, you can use it. So a subscription on Apple may work on all of them. A subscription on T-Mobile will work on all of them. So it gives you a better chance of communicating with someone when you're in a place where there's no regular ground transmissions. Global satellite operators have largely aligned around the multi-orbit approach. Companies across the industry are integrating newer LEO capabilities with existing fleets of medium orbit and geostationary satellites, which orbit roughly 22,000 miles above the Earth. Contrivion's chief executive, Grant Kirkwood, argues those architectures create performance problems rooted in basic physics. A LEO broadband system typically delivers round-trip latency near 40 milliseconds, close enough to terrestrial internet speeds that users generally don't notice delays. GEO systems can exceed 600 milliseconds because signals must travel much farther. The difference becomes significant when applications suddenly switch between orbital layers during that what network engineers call failover events, when traffic automatically moves from the connection path to another after degradation or interruption. And this story goes on for quite a bit. And if we jump down here to the bottom, not everyone is likely to agree. GEO satellites remain valuable for applications requiring broad persistence coverage, and their stationary position means they avoid the constant handoffs inherent in LEO networks. Military users are expected to continue relying on GEO systems for communications and broadcasting. The deeper question now confronting the industry, Kirkwood said, is whether greater resilience comes from layering together every available orbit or from making proliferated LEO networks interchangeable enough that users no longer care which constellation carries the traffic. So thanks to Space News and Sandra Irwin for that story. Quite interesting. And I wonder how many constellations we can get up there before we start seeing shadows on the ground from blockage of the sun. That would be kind of interesting for someone to study, one of the universities maybe. And over here on Echolink, they're talking about bad weather. And, yep, the Houston area tonight is supposed to get some heavy storms. We haven't had any issue up where I am. Other than earlier today, a contractor kind of cut a gas pipeline and had to close the main way into the city. So we had to go the back way, which adds about 20 to 30 minutes to the drive because you got to go all around no man's land. So that was kind of fun. But they had it where we could get through after about 2 or 3 hours. So haven't heard if the pipeline was finally repaired or if they've kept it cut off until they can repair it tomorrow. Who knows? But contractors do what contractors do best, and that's what happens. And we got to stop this again for the repeaters. I don't know what happened. Ah, there we go. I have no idea what caused everything to kind of crap out for a minute. I was getting all the texting on the Echo Link. All the messages were coming through. So, huh. And then I noticed that the audio was stopped. No clue why. So I don't really know how far I had gotten in that story or how long it had been kind of dead to the world. sorry about that, guys. But that story was on Contrivian, and it was on Space News, and it was written by Sandra Irwin on May 19th. So that was really interesting. And as I was saying before, I realized that we were kind of cut off here. It's going to be interesting if everyone keeps launching these constellations with thousands and thousands and thousands of Leos. What's going to happen? Are we going to get, is it going to look like a cloud and we're going to be under shade during parts of the day or parts of their pass? Or is, you know, it's not going to be that bad because they're so small. It'll be interesting, but I'm sure that astronomers have already been complaining that it creates a problem for them. So, no, Andrew, you didn't knock the internet out up here or whatever. But yes, there is heavy storms coming through the Houston area this evening. We haven't experienced anything up here where I live yet because we're about 35, 40 miles north of Houston. Had to get further away from the Gulf, so when the hurricanes come, they don't bother us as much. They still do, but it's better than living closer. So, I think with that, what I do, make it to 8:47. So, I'm going to go ahead and call it quits since I did run out of information. We found some really good stories to bring you. And haven't heard from Marty lately, so don't know how he's doing. Hopefully he's getting settled in that new house. So for Marty and myself, 73, and one of us will see you back here next week. This is KK5DO.